sometimes I feel betrayed by liberals, by some of the politicians who I had hope in them to actually publicly condemn human rights abuse in Islamic Republic. And I don't understand that how they cannot even stand up for their own values. I'm lost. The only thing that I can say is just, I'm sure that the history will judge them.
Liberal Halvtime. En podcast fra tankesmien Civita.
Hello and welcome to Liberal Halvtime, Liberal Half Hour. I'm your host, Erik Løkke. For the benefit of my guest today, our podcast conversation will be in English. Today's topic is the Islamic Republic of Iran and the future of the Iranian people. The Iranian regime is without doubt one of the worst regimes in the world when it comes to human rights. Moreover, the regime is a danger to stability in the larger Middle East through its sectarian support of various militant groups and state sponsor of terrorism. The Ayatollahs in Tehran represents a clear and present danger to the West, let alone the fact that they are an imminent threat to their own population. Given this situation, how should the West approach Iran? Should we see closer ties in the spirit of détente and mutual understanding? Or should we be more vocal in our criticism towards the regime in Iran? Stand our ground, so to speak. My guest today argues the latter. My guest is Masi Alinejad, a human rights activist and a journalist currently living in New York City. I met Masi back in March when she visited Oslo to take part in a Civita event, and she truly is a remarkable woman. Her activism has gained traction online and is now followed by millions. You should definitely check out her online activities, especially her project, My Stealth Freedom. My conversation with Masi is originally a Civita Samtale, a Civita conversation published on YouTube, which now also is available on Liberal Halvtime, Liberal Half Hour. Before I give you my conversation with Masi, I would like to remind you of the opportunity to rate this podcast. If you like Liberal Halvtime, take a moment on iTunes to rate us and feel free to provide a review. That would be very helpful. Now I give you Masi and her thoughts on the Iranian regime and the future for the Iranian people. So, Masi Alinejad, thank you so much for participating on this Civita podcast and Civita conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure for me.
Great to have you. We're going through this discussion to get into several things about Iran, but just to start, I would like to ask you to give a brief overview, explanation of the nature of the Iranian regime. It's a dictatorship. It's a theocracy. You could use many words, but I would like to hear how you would describe it.
Sure. I have to say that Iranian regime is a religious dictatorship. So basically, the Islamic Republic took Iran hostage, and not only about women, it's about the minority in Iran. It's about Baha'i, Jewish. It's about all non-Muslim people in Iran. They are like hostage in the hand of Islamic Republic. So if you do not follow Islamic laws, which is called Sharia laws, then you won't be able to live in Iran. So that is why I'm saying that this is a religious dictatorship. All the laws are actually giving power to the politicians to execute people if they, exit from Islam or if they do not follow Islamic laws. For instance, if you are a woman from the age of 7, if you do not cover your hair, you won't be able to go to school. You won't be able to get an education. So basically, you won't be able to get any kind of documents and you won't be able to live in your own country. If you are a minority, you won't be able to go to school if you express that you're not Muslim. Like Baha'i, they're not allowed to have an education in Iran. They're not even allowed to have their own business if they say that we are Baha'i. So, but forget about all these. So you say that on your paperwork, school, university, workplace, that I am Muslim. But if you don't practice that in public, you will be executed or you will get lashes. For instance, recently, one of the Iranian young men, he was not young. He was 45 years old. So he got executed and the lawyer exposed the reason, saying that he got arrested 3 times for drinking alcohol. But according to Sharia laws in Iran, if you get arrested more than 4 times, then the law actually allows the government to execute you. And for women inside Iran as well, if you don't cover your hair in public by purpose and protesting against compulsory hijab, according to Sharia laws, you can get lashes. So that is why I call Islamic Republic a religious dictatorship. But when you see what they have been doing for 40 years, it is exactly what ISIS has been doing recently, these years. But the government in Iran, they're officially doing that by relying on the laws, Sharia laws. Look, ISIS take hostage. So of course they beheaded them. They cut their head in front of camera. But the Islamic Republic of Iran do this in a way to not lose the support from international community. They took your family hostage to keep you silent if you're a journalist or activist. They took you hostage if you're dual national citizens. So they took the family of those people who they killed in Iran protests hostage because they don't want the family to speak up. Like in Iran protests, 1,500 people got killed. The Revolutionary Guards shot down the airplane. 176 people got killed. So where are their families? Their family lives inside Iran. They have to keep silent because they're like hostage. So that is why I always say that Islamic Republic of Iran is like ISIS, but they have parliament, government, and they can easily go to United Nations in America and talk to the rest of the world.
Do we know anything about how much support the regime in Iran have among ordinary Iranians?
That's a very good question, because a lot of people in Iran sometimes think that there is difference between the reformist and the conservative. I myself was one of them. So I thought that to breathe, to have a little more freedom, maybe I could participate in an election and vote for the reformist, then we can be a little bit more free. But these days, Iranian people actually lost their hope on reformists. And they strongly believe that they, when it comes to human rights, when it comes to women's rights, when it comes to the right of the gay people or minority Baha'i people, there is no difference between reformists and conservative. And that is why they took to the streets in Iran protests. And the main slogan was this: there is no difference between reformists and conservative, and you must go away. So, but let me give you an example. We don't have free election in Iran. As a woman, I'm not allowed to choose what I want to wear. I'm not allowed to ride a bicycle. I'm not allowed to travel abroad without getting permission from my husband. I'm not even allowed to get a passport without getting permission from my husband. I'm not allowed to enter a stadium. I don't have the right to sing. I don't have the right to dance. I don't have the right to get the custody of my child, but I have been given the right to vote. So it shows you that this is not a free election. They give us the right to vote. Why? Because they want to show the rest of the world that this is a democratic country, but this is not a real election. And that is why a lot of people now using social media, trying to educate the ordinary people that, look, they are using our votes outside Iran to oppress us, and we should not vote for our own oppressors.
Okay. Let me ask you about the regime before the Islamic revolution. Some people say that at least during the Shah, the women's position was much freer, although you had the secret police and it was not a democracy before the Islamic revolution. How was the situation before the Islamic revolution in Iran?
I mean, I have to say that a lot of people that I am in touch with them, who was actually part of the revolution, they were like very frustrated by the situation in Iran. And they were telling me that those people who were participating in the revolution, they were telling me that that time we needed a reform. We overthrew the regime. But right now, we have to get rid of the Islamic Republic. A lot of people said that we need a reform. So people who participate in the revolution, they're saying that they were looking for more political freedom because they already had social freedom. Like, women were allowed to sing, to participate in any kind of sports. Women were allowed to walk shoulder to shoulder with or without hijab. Women were allowed to be judges. We had female ministers. But after the revolution, I have to say that the revolution itself became a revolution against women, became a revolution against ordinary people, because people were looking like for greater freedom, political freedom. They didn't gain it, but they lost all the social freedom they had. It a lot of singers, they were kicked out from Iran. You know, we have Iranian Beyonce, we have Iranian Madonna, but they all live in LA. This is 21st century, and women are banned from singing, which we already had that before the revolution. Like the Shirin Ebadi was now the Nobel Peace Prize winner. She was judge in Iran, but she was just kicked out after the revolution. And we have a lot of female judges, but they are not allowed to practice. So a lot of people actually crying when they remember the time that women and men sitting together in a stadium in Iran. But right now, a young woman set herself on fire to get the right to go to stadium, Sahar Khodayari, the blue girl. So that is why when you talk to the people inside Iran, they have a lot of good memory, nostalgias. There are a lot of, like, you know, family who got executed after the revolution, or were forced to leave Iran and live in exile, or go to prison just because of criticizing the government, or practicing their, like, basic rights, like drinking alcohol.
Right.
Like writing.
Interesting follow-up on the basis on the Islamic revolution and the things you're saying now. In your view, would you say that it is Islam in itself it is the problem, or it's the specific interpretation which the regime in Tehran have or uses as a tool? I know it's a very controversial question, but I would like to hear
your
thoughts.
It is a very controversial question, but let me be clear with you. The Shah of Iran was a Muslim man, but he never executed people just because of not practicing Islam in Iran. What we dream is this. Religious should be separated from politics. We don't want the Sharia laws in our country force people to follow Islamic dress code, to follow Islamic laws and Islamic lifestyle. That's not too much to demand. And when we talk about this, a lot of people around the world do not even want to hear us because they think that we're causing Islamophobia. But I have to tell you that all the Sharia laws, which taking my rights away from me, is the reason that people are scared of Islam around the world. Because from the age of 7, I was not able to be my true self. All the basic rights that my brother was able to practice, I was banned. So if you ask any Western feminist or Western politicians who are supporting the Islamic Republic, whether they want to live under Sharia laws, they say no. But they don't want us to be loud and criticize the Sharia laws and the Islamic Republic because they think that we are causing Islamophobia. So for us, the people who actually live in the Middle East and practice the Sharia laws and experience the like pressure from Sharia laws, we say that we don't want an Islamic regime. We want a secular democratic country where like the rest of the world enjoying it. And we deserve it because we already had it in Iran.
Well, speaking of the West, in your view, how is the West approaching Iran, in general speaking, the European Union, the US, Great Britain?
To be honest with you, I have to say Iranian people risked their lives. They got beaten up in Iran protests. They got killed in front of their beloved one. Brothers together, two brothers, shoulder to shoulder, they got killed. The security forces opened fire on people while they shut down internet for 3 days, and they killed more than 1,000 people. And 7,000 people are in prison just because of risking their lives and saying that we don't want an Islamic regime. But what helped the government to stay in power, it's the European government. Because I'm not exaggerating. Because the right time when people were in the street in challenging the whole regime, Federico Mogherini was there, the head of the European Union. She was there, and she were just, you know, taking selfie with the member of the parliament, with Javad Zarif, without mentioning about the people who got killed in the streets. Or let me be clear with you. When President Trump actually condemned the killings, the brutality of the regime, a lot of people criticized him and saying that this is an internal matter, you should not take part. But what broke my heart was this. We were actually expecting the government from France, from Germany, from Belgium, from Sweden, from the rest of the world to join him. Right now, the European government, they are not silent about what happened in America to George Floyd. They all condemned that. Even people in the West, they took to the street and they are showing solidarity with Black Lives Matter, which is amazing. When I see this unity, I get goosebumps. But what we ask the people in the Middle East, in Iran, is this, so simple. Where is this solidarity when the government in Iran killed 1,500 people? Where was that solidarity in Green Movement when the government killed more than 100 people? Then the president of the United States of America, President Obama, were sending secret letter to the supreme leader of Iran to get a deal. So this is called hypocrisy. When you see that the European government condemned Burkini ban in France, condemned the brutality of the police in the United States of America, but when it comes to Islamic Republic, they all keep silent because they just want to have a deal and commercial business. And they bury human rights. And that actually helped the government of Iran to kill more people. Mm. What I want to say is just so simple. Imagine in the Europe, the government shut down the internet for 3 days. What would you do? You go after Twitter. You go after Instagram. You go after Facebook. And you ask them. You demand them. And you warn them. You call on them to kick out all the politicians who are using the same internet, who are using the same social media. You see the leaders of the Islamic Republic freely using Twitter to mislead the rest of the world. If you see in the Europe that police took to the street and killed protesters, what would you do? You call on United Nations to have an open investigation about the killings. But when it comes to Iran, the rest of the world thinks this is normal. But it is not. It is not normal to be killed or to be arrested for expressing yourself or having your basic right. It is not normal even for activists. Their family being hostage, taken hostage in that by the Iranian government just because they want us, even in the free country, to be silent.
So what kind of approach would you like to see from the Western governments in their approach to Iran? I mean, from the United States, there have been very tough sanctions for a number of years, which, as far as I can tell, is having an effect on the Iranian economy. Europe has been not as forceful as the United States, but how would you like to see the Western approach to Iran?
I would see the Western government care about human rights more than anything. They have to just actually respect their own values. To be honest, I don't want them to come and rescue us, the people in Iran, because Iranian people are brave enough to stand up and practice civil disobedience every day. I want the Western government to stand up for their own values. So for that, I just want to give you an example. When the Iranian government go to Europe, the first thing that they ask is this: remove all the alcohol beverages from any kind of official meeting, official dinner. Why they ask you to do that? Because they respect their values. And they even want you to cover the nude statues in Italy. In Italy, you remember? Mm. So why they do that? Because they stand up for their own values. What I want to hear from one Western politician that, wow, you go and negotiate with such a government when they force you to cover yourself when you visit Iranian government, the female politicians. How come you don't stand for your own values? So some of the female politicians says that it's for us, it's just respecting, you know, the culture of Iran. I want to say that do not call a barbaric law part of our culture, because for that, you're actually insulting a nation. While Iranian people are standing up against all the restrictive laws, and then you're respecting the same laws, legitimizing compulsory hijab and any kind of restrictive laws in Iran and calling this as a cultural issue and I have to respect it. No, you actually legitimizing a religious dictatorship to put more pressure on its own people. This is all we want. We want Western government to stand up for universal values and do not obey a religious dictatorship. Some of them say that if we don't obey, you know, some of the restrictive laws, then we lose connection with the Islamic Republic. We cannot negotiate with them. We cannot have a dialogue with them about like bigger issues around the world. But let me be clear with you. If you cannot have the control of your own body, Federico Mogherini, all the female politicians, if you cannot have, you know, the right to make decision about your own body in any meeting with the Islamic Republic of Iran, then you won't be able to solve bigger problems, because they're not going to let you to make decision about bigger problem around the world. That's just so simple, isn't it?
Yeah, I certainly follow your reasoning. Some might say, especially around the Obama administration, who were very active in negotiating the nuclear deal, that they were very specific that this deal was not about human rights, was not about changing...
No, I mean, what happened, Iranian people took to the street and they were actually chanting that the next deal should be about human rights. توافق بعدی ما حقوق شهروندی ما. That was the main slogan in the street of Iran. But when President Trump pulled out the deal, what happened? People didn't take to the street and saying death to America, death to Trump. They took to the street and saying death to the whole regime. Why? Because people, a lot of people had a hope that the deal will give an opportunity to Islamic Republic of Iran to back down. You know, the situation is going to be better. Maybe we are not going to be isolated. And the European government, the US government watching us, and the government going to back down. They're not going to kill people. They're not going to arrest people. They're going to have another deal about human rights. Nothing happened. The money, the benefit of the deal went to Hezbollah, went to Hamas, went to Syria, went to Bashar Assad. So, and people were angry.
As I understood it, and you can agree or disagree, I have a feeling that you disagree with the argument, but certainly the argument is as follows. We needed that the Obama administration and the people who supported the deal argued that this is not about human rights, it's not about changing the regime, but it's about stopping the Iranian regime from developing nuclear weapons, which had first priority because a nuclear Iran would create...
Okay, I have a simple question.
Yeah.
I have a simple question. A lot of people say that nuclear deal was about to stop the regime from having nuclear weapon. So my question is this. How come you trust a regime who shut down the internet for 3 days and killed more than 1,000 people to stop from having nuclear weapon? That was the Revolutionary Guards in Iran opened fire and people and kill them. That is the Revolutionary Guard in Iran taking the families of the activists hostage. This is the Revolutionary Guards in Iran actually putting 7,000 people in prison just because of peacefully protesting against the you know economic situation, against the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the Revolutionary Guard killing people, forcing them to do false confession.
Right.
Then you, the Western government, wanting the same Revolutionary Guard to have a deal with you and stop them from having nuclear weapon?
But the Obama administration would say that it's not based on trust. They quite thought, you can't trust Iranians. We would want verifiable mechanisms, which they said they had in this deal that Trump terminated. Again, you could disagree with the goal of the nuclear deal or put human rights above stopping the Iranian regime from getting it, but I mean that's the argument many people use, especially connected with the Obama administration. We had a deal. We had our intelligence service and other people following up, not by trusting the Iranians or the Iranian regimes. No way. Verifiable mechanisms, which even if I remember correctly, the CIA and other parts of U.S. Agencies said that Iran actually was living up to the responsibilities in the agreement. So I mean, it would be an important goal to stop the Ayatollahs in Tehran from getting nuclear weapons, wouldn't you say?
I have to say that nothing can stop the Ayatollahs from abusing its own people and the rest of the world. Why I'm claiming that? When coronavirus entered Iran, it didn't stay there. Because of the mismanagement and covering up and corruption in among the politicians, the coronavirus didn't stay only in Iran. It infected the rest of the world. It's like in China. The coronavirus entered in China, but it didn't stay there because of the corruption of the government. The Islamic Republic is not just hurting its own people. They're sending their armies to Syria, to Lebanon, and everywhere, and even outside Iran, to kill the oppositions outside Iran. So simple. I'm saying that you cannot have negotiation with this kind of government, with such a brutal government, without talking about human rights. And I have been in touch with Hillary Clinton just last year, and I talked to her about why during Green Movement, Obama's administration were only concerned about nuclear deal without talking about human rights while the people in Iran were chanting against the whole regime. And she said she regrets. And she said that was not a good policy to keep silent about human rights during Green Movement. And she said that we should have supported the Green Movement. So a lot of people might say that, no, this is an internal matter and you should keep silent. But I want to actually address them about what's going on in Iran, in America right now, about Black Lives Matter, The whole world is talking about it because of human rights. It's a global issue. And you cannot keep silent and just go after the politician talking about nuclear deal without actually considering that the same regime is killing its own people while I'm just looking and focusing about having a deal.
So, Masi, I think you have very good arguments in terms of the human rights thing. And I'm having problems, although I think I laid out the case that the Obama administration made for why they were so concerned with the nuclear deal. But I mean, if the West would just stay true to their values, as you said, stating publicly and criticizing the Iranian government, not saying that we're not going to deal with the Iranian regime, not saying that we're going to have negotiations, but we're going to be clear on what our values are and we're going to state it publicly. And we're going to do that all the times with Iranians, with other authoritarian regimes. And I have so many problems understanding why that is so difficult. China, maybe because we become so dependent on them on different issues, but still, it's. I mean, you have lived in US for some time now. Why do you think it's so difficult for the West to be true to their values in their foreign policy?
To be honest, sometimes I feel betrayed by liberals, by some of the politicians who I had hope on them to actually publicly condemn human rights abuse in Islamic Republic. And I don't understand that how they cannot even stand up for their own values. I'm lost. The only thing that I can say is just, I'm sure that the history will judge them. You know, I don't want to talk only about my own brother. But I just want to give you an example about what happened to me in the United States of America. I asked Ilhan Omar, one of the, you know, well-known and vocal politicians here in the United States of America.
The squad.
Ilhan Omar, to ask the Islamic Republic to release female activists who want to be, you know, free from compulsory hijab. Because you see, you live in America and you can practice your rights, then you have to show solidarity, you have to support the sisterhood. So speak up for these women who are in prison just because of protesting against compulsory hijab. She kept silent. I asked Ilhan Omar, when my mother was interrogated for 2 hours just because of my fight against compulsory hijab, she kept silent. I asked Ilhan Omar actually to speak up when the Iranian government shut down the internet for 3 days, and they killed more than 1,000 people. They arrested 7,000 people. And I asked her, speak up, show your solidarity, because the government wouldn't, you know, ignore her because she wears hijab and she could challenge the Islamic Republic. She kept silent. But when it comes to bullying me, she joined the campaign to attack me. And I was shocked. Right now, my brother received an 8 years prison sentence just because the government took him hostage to keep me silent. Still, Ilhan Omar keeps silent. And I don't understand that, how come you call yourself human rights fighter, but when it comes to Islamic Republic, you keep silent. This is actually about the whole liberals and, you know, politicians in the West, in America, that they condemn burkini ban in France, they condemn the, you know, brutal death of killing of George Floyd in America, but they totally keep silent when people get killed in the Middle East, in Islamic Republic of Iran, because for them, human rights is just a tool to follow their own political agenda. For me and many activists inside Iran, in Saudi Arabia, in like everywhere who cares about human rights, doesn't matter who kills people or who is in power in the world. We think human rights should go first. And that is why I feel betrayed, especially when I see that these politicians, they have power, they have media, but they keep silent.
That is actually a larger issue, isn't it? I mean, I think it's disgraceful the way that Ilhan Omar has conducted herself, and actually also many others. But you have the politicians, but you have also the big debate among Western feminists and liberals, as you say. And do you feel that they are less inclined to criticize foreign cultures and more concerned? I think they're sometimes extremely concerned about how bad things are in the West. Yes, we have. We need to improve. There are a lot of things you can improve, as the latest protest in the US has showed, and also so in Europe. But I mean, if you're not a totally cultural relativist, I mean, there are no places on the earth in human history where women and human rights have been so respected as in the West. I mean, am I missing something?
Like, when a lot of people, especially the Western feminists, keep silent about human rights abuse, women's rights abuse in Iran, they concern about the argument of like white savior complex. They don't want to get in, interfere in like any kind of internal matter in the Middle East. I don't get it. We shouldn't care about colors. Doesn't matter. A black person, an Asian person, like people from the Middle East, white person, if their right being taken away, we have to be united. A lot of white people stand up and go to the street shoulder to shoulder and shout Black Lives Matter, which is amazing, which is beautiful. But when it comes to women in the Middle East, you suddenly care about colors and you say that it's white savior complex. We don't want to talk about it. This is hypocrisy. You should not talk about colors. You should talk about human rights.
Right.
We should get all united when it comes to human rights. You cover yourself when you go to Iran. You obey compulsory hijab because you say that you have to respect our culture. This is just obvious. Religious dictatorship using compulsory hijab as a tool to control not only the women inside Iran, to control the whole society. And you obeying the same discriminatory law by saying that this is a law or this is your culture? No. Slavery used to be legal. And you have to stand up against any kind of slavery, any kind of dictatorship, without saying that, no, this is white savior complex. We don't want to. No, this is not. This is just legitimizing a dictatorship to kill its own people. That's it. That's so simple.
Yeah, and it's universal values. Some people call it Western values. I call it universal values.
Honestly, when a lot of people say that we shouldn't, ask the people in the Middle East to follow Western values, this is an insult to us. Because the human rights, come on, it's not Western values. It is universal values. Before the Islamic Republic, we, the people in Iran, had the right to choose our own lifestyle, to choose what we want to wear, to choose whether we want to follow the Islamic laws or not, Islamic values or not. So after the revolution, the Islamic Republic actually took the whole nation hostage and forcing them to follow Islamic lifestyle. And now you're saying that this is their culture? By calling it discriminatory laws part of our culture, I am repeating myself. You are actually insulting the whole nation, because human rights, it's universal values. It's not Western values. And you have to stick with universal values without being hesitated. You have to stand up against religious dictatorship and tell them that we are not respecting your values. We are respecting universal values. That's too much to ask.
Well, I completely agree with you. And a final question here, Masih, looking to the future and the battle in Iran, what are you hoping for, and what is realistic to expect, and what can the rest of the world do in helping and promoting freedom in Iran and the Middle East? It's a big question, I know, but I would like to hear your thoughts.
It is a big question. The human rights situation in Iran, it's beyond words. I don't know how to express myself to get the attention of the rest of the world and tell them that this is not normal for us, the people of Iran, just being killed, being tortured, being forced to do false confession, being in jail, being kicked out from our beloved homeland. It's not normal just because of expressing ourselves and having the same normal life that you do have in the rest of the world. And of course, I'm sure that you still are fighting for democracy around the world, but respect our fight as well. And let's be united. And my dream is this, that one day the whole world can understand that Iranian people deserve to be free and have a free election, have freedom of expression. And that's not something luxury for Iranian people. That's my dream. I want the rest of the world to stand up with the people of Iran. If you really look for stability in the region, then you should not go and have negotiation with an unstable regime. You should recognize and negotiate with human rights activists in Iran. Recognize those people who are sacrificing their lives because they want to have a better world to live, not just a better country, better place in the world to live.
Masih, thank you so much for joining me for this conversation, and I wish you the best of luck with your brave fight and the future of the Iranian people. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Liberal Half Hour. To our English-speaking audience, let me remind you of the many great episodes we have in English. Through the summer, my colleague, Mathilde Fasting, has talked to numerous international guests in English. You will find all the episodes in the archive for Liberal Halvtime. For the benefit of our Norwegian-speaking audience, my last 30 seconds will be in Norwegian. Takk for at dere hørte på. Hvis dere liker det dere hørte og har lyst til å bidra positivt for podcasten, kan dere rate podcasten i iTunes og gi gjerne 5 stjerner. Har du muligheten til å tipse noen du tror vil like programmet, så vil det naturligvis bidra til å øke gjennomslaget vårt. La meg også minne om Civitas nyhetsbrev. Det blir en veldig spennende høst med mange interessante arrangementer i regi Civita. Du kan få direkte invitasjon til disse ved å melde deg på Civitas nyhetsbrev. Det finner du på civita.no. Vi høres!
Liberal halvtime. En podcast fra tankesmien Civita. Moderne media.